That's our website, Hagman and Hagman, for this show. Of course, our YouTube channel. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Please do that. Also, please follow us on social networking. Again, it's not the numbers. It's not, you know, it's really not the numbers. So we can say how many we have. It's the presence where we can operate at a higher level, obviously, and that those numbers provide us a level of insulation. So please subscribe anywhere we are, even if you don't use Twitter, subscribe, or, you know, if you're whatever, just help us out and do that. Support our sponsors, and thank you so much for your financial support so we can keep this engine running, the pump primed. We can do things behind the scenes. Satellite Phone Store. Speaking of sponsors, satellitephonestore.com, satellitephonestore.com. That's right, satellitephonestore.com. Let me tell you something. In times when you need, in times of crises, communications are extremely important. What happens when the cell towers go down, when the grid goes down? Satellite phones, you're going to need that communication. Talk to my good friend Eric Tallman at the Satellite Phone Store, satellitephonestore.com. Give him a call. Go to satellitephonestore.com. Look up Eric Tallman from the Satellite Phone Store and have him recommend a plan for you. Tell him what your needs are. They'll fashion a plan for you. The Iridium satellite phones are personal favorites. And everything can be run by satellite. It's now about the same price, roughly, as, you know, some of the cell phone plans out there. Really, it's not that much more, and the peace of mind is well worth it. SatellitePhoneStore.com. I also want to mention Trading Post in the Woods as well. Trading Post in the Woods, they've got just wonderful products. We use all of their products. They've got the American Heritage Remedies Kit. Well, let me tell you something. Trading Post in the Woods, the knowledge that they've got, the various products that they have, it's just an amazing website, amazing people behind the website, and amazing products. TradingPostInTheWoods.com. Folks, visit Trading Post in the Woods and send them a question. If you've got questions about the products, send them a question. They will respond. They are really good at that. And I've learned so much through that website, TradingPostInTheWoods.com. Lastly, you know, it's interesting because I just received a book in the mail. Well, I shouldn't say just received a book in the mail. When John Robertson was here.
Yeah, that's, I started reading that.
We were going through some things, and, you know, I have to make an apology to Chad Schaefer. He, for not responding earlier on this.
Chad Schaefer.
Okay. Well, he was a caller. He started off, in fact, here's what he wrote, in the inscription part of his book titled The World in the Bondage of Egypt Under the Triumphal Arch of Titus. Okay. He wrote, in part, he wrote, never in a million years did I foresee going from just being a caller all those years ago, known simply as Chad from Indiana, to being a guest on the program. So Chad from Indiana, you remember him? He wrote a book with Doug Krieger, The World in the Bondage of Egypt. God bless him. And Karen Rogers, too. Karen Rogers, Racing with My Shadow. I mean, we have some great listeners, mm-hmm. great members of our listening audience. Racing with My Shadow, what a wonderful, what a fantastic story. Go to Amazon.com, Racing with My Shadow, Karen Rogers. Okay.
And we got Stan Deo with us. Just real quick, want to give you guys an update on a breaking story. Broke on Drudge just a little bit ago. Obama intelligence agencies secretly conducted illegal searches on Americans for years. This is a story that's developing and talks about the National Security Agency under President Barack Obama routinely violating American privacy protections while scouring through overseas intercepts, failing to disclose the extent of the problems. And it says more than 5%, one out of every 20 searches seeking upstream internet data on Americans inside the NSA so-called Section 702 database violated the safeguards Obama and his intelligence chiefs vowed to follow in 2011. So keep your eyes on that. Stan, welcome back to the show.
good to be back. Did I miss anything in 2 weeks?
Well, that depends. I'm sure you were, you guys have, were keeping up to date with the news and everything. No, not really. No.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
We missed you, though. Same
over,
stuff.
A weekend over in the Middle East, hadn't it?
Very much so. I see on the show images page, you got a lot of stuff up there about Trump's first foreign policy trip, both to Israel, Saudi Arabia, and to the Vatican, which the latter part is one he's still on his way to.
Yeah, that's in progress, yeah. But
so,
the first one,
yeah, where do we
sorry,
start?
Go on.
No, where should we start?
Well, okay, first of all, the waving the U.S. flag over there really looked good. Trump looked very presidential, and his wife presented well. The situation that you see on TV doesn't tell you a lot of the behind-the-scenes problems over there, and how difficult what he wants to achieve would be to achieve between the Arabs and Israel and the Vatican and various other countries here like Iran. I think you're probably aware that Saudi Arabia and Iran are at odds with each other over their different types of Islam, are you not?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Well, now, normally you have Sunni Islam and Shia. The Saudis are Sunnis. The Iranians are Shia. Now, within the Saudi Islamic faith, they have a what they call a an extremist group, which are called Wahhabis, after the guy that started back in the late 1700s, you know, Muhammad blah 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 bin Wahhab. And the thing is that this Wahhab fellow looked at Islam and he said, you know, at Sunni Muslim Islam, and he said, okay, I see people, you know, Muslims from other countries in the Arab states coming over here and worshiping, you know, at Mecca, at the big cube, you know, and various other religious sites and graves of imams that have passed that were really great teachers, but they're leaving, you know, like offerings and stuff at the graves of these imams and great leaders, and not so much worshiping, you know, Allah, as the Sunni teaching should say. So this guy says, this Wahhab guy says, okay, let's cut out all this stuff and worship one God, not a bunch of little, you know, heroes, you know, imams, etc. in the faith. That's just not what the Quran says. So his extremism was to cut it back to worshiping one God and no, in their terms, you know, like a saint in the Catholic Church, go like that. And so that's extreme in the Muslim faith in the Middle East. Now, the fundamentalist Christians are, in essence, like that a bit toward the Vatican and the various saints and stuff that people pray to, that kind of stuff. We don't do that. So, in essence, we're like the Wahhab version of Islam in that we are the fundamentalist version of what the Bible teaches. Anyway, knowing this, you look back into the history of Saudi Arabia, and you see that this guy, Wahhab, didn't get much traction in the beginning when he started trying to preach his version of interpreting the Quran. And he moved over into the middle of Saudi Arabia, into Riyadh, and in the area there, a little suburb there, and he said, look, to the Saud family, look, I need to push this forward. It's a good concept. And the Saud family said, yeah, okay, that's a good idea. We'll back you. So they gave him lodging, they funded him, and it started the spread of Wahhabism in Saudi Arabia, and then eventually around to other Arab countries. But mainly the seed of it is Saudi Arabia. Now, the Saud family, of course, are the ruling family now of Saudi Arabia. King Salman is King Salman Al Saud of the Saud family. The situation with terrorism in the world, particularly in the Middle East where it starts, is that a lot of terrorism comes out of the Wahhabi faction of Islam in Saudi Arabia. So President Trump goes over there to meet with the Arabs to sell them planes and arms and stuff like that. And then he leaves from there and goes over to Israel. Of course, we know that we support Israel with arms and all kinds of stuff, you know, money and support politically. Now, the two are at odds with each other. What I cannot understand is how, you know, anyone, you know, Trump or anyone else, is going to get the Wahhabis, you know, the Wahhabis of Saudi Arabia to accept Israel and to make peace and not fight anymore. The only reason that Saudi Arabia is not going after Israel at the moment is that the enemy of Saudi Arabia is Iran. So the enemy of his enemy, which would be Israel and the United States, are his friends. It's kind of a strange bedfellow thing where, you know, the United States arms Saudi Arabia to get against Iran and settle the Syrian conflict and still protect Israel. This is a very, very delicate situation over there at the moment, and my hat's off to President Trump for going over there and trying to to bring peace between these warring factions. It's a several thousand-year-old war that's escalated once Mohammed put religion onto the Arab countries over there. And about 3 weeks ago, on the 4th of May, in essence, the King Salman's brother died. Now, he was the head of the council, or the commission, in Saudi Arabia that chooses who's going to be the next king, you know, the succession council. Now, he died on the 4th of May. He was bin Salman, you know, the king's brother and powerhouse there to allow King Salman to choose who he wanted to through his brother controlling the council. Now, he's died now. Okay. Before he died, King Salman had said, okay, let's appoint my young nephew over on this side of the family, Mohammed bin Nayef. Let's appoint him as the successor to the throne. And the deputy successor will be my son, Mohammed bin Salman, MBN. MBS. Okay, well, now that his brother's died, I think there's like 27 or 28 members of the council. I'm not exactly sure the number anymore, but it means that there will be possibly a new dynamic in there. And bin Nayef, the appointed crown prince to succeed King Salman, has trained with the United States, in essence, against radical terrorism. So he's wanting to get rid of ISIS and a lot of other things like that. Bin Salman, the king's son, is in opposition to bin Nayef. Now, I know this is starting to sound like a lot of strange names and who's up who, but the two guys that are vying for control of the country to be king of Saudi Arabia when King Salman dies, which he may do soon, or he may be removed from power because of his senility. These two guys are competing, and they're two different kinds of ideologies, totally two different kinds. Prince bin Salman is young, 31, 32 age. He's a progressive. The two-thirds of the country that are under 30 love him to death. Bin Nayef, the other guy that wants the throne, is an old fuddy-duddy and, is not so much supporting the Wahhabi support of terrorism. Now, the Saud family, as I said at the beginning of this, they helped Wahhabism form. And the Sunni Muslims of the country, which Wahhabi is a part of, but the other mainstream Sunnis don't like the ruling family, Saud. So the country is in a very delicate state of balance. I think that what's going to happen is that the people will run with Mohammed bin Salman. As I've been saying for some time, Salman sounds like Solomon, like in the Revelation 13, where we talked about the here wisdom is it, and it's King Solomon, and the modern Antichrist may well be a Solomon type character, and he may even have the name Solomon. That's not a Hebrew name, by the way, Solomon. The Hebrew name for King Solomon that we know. it's interesting that two of the five potential candidates for Antichrist that I put on my show images page here last year were visited and, you know, wined and dined back and forth by President Trump. Not the Pope, but the Salman family. You know, both the King and both Bin Nayef and Bin Salman have been over and talked with President Trump before the visit that we saw this weekend. So it was kind of old home week for them, knowing ideas and sharing things. But going over to the Vatican now, we've got another candidate possibly for Antichrist. I know some people say it might be Obama. Some people say it might be Erdogan of Turkey, you know, Assad of Syria. There are four or five of these that I've put up, you know, characteristics for them at that page. If you go to my show images page, it's image 13. You click on that and you can go see all that stuff about them and their various characteristics that might qualify them for Antichrist. The problem I see is that Trump is he's certainly going over on a fact-finding mission and trying to give, you know, income to the United States by selling weapons and things like that. But are they going to, the United States manufacturers, are they going to put some kind of software or glitch in the weapons they're selling to our potential enemies, you know, the Saudis, so that they can turn them off if they try to attack Israel? I mean, I can see that President Trump is very good friends with Netanyahu and is supporting Israel. But, you know, how do we stop, by funding all this weaponry for Saudis, how do we stop them using that against Israel? You know, I don't understand how that can be done.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot. There's a lot of intrigue into this foreign policy trip by Trump, and what you just laid out about the Saudi princes and the fact that he wants to, what you said about bringing peace to the two different factions from a, you know, thousands of year old conflict. I'm not sure that can be attained. At the same time, you have to make the effort, and he seems to be doing that. And as far as Netanyahu is concerned, there's a lot of, you know, he has Jared Kushner, his son-in-law. There is a lot of people who believe that his ties to Israel are some kind of hindrance to his presidency, which I don't understand.
But okay, can I ask a question? What did you, Stan, what was your opinion about the optics, or with the optics of Donald Trump going to the Western Wall?
That was interesting. I don't understand totally. I know what they said, but I don't understand why the State Department didn't want Netanyahu and Trump to go together to the Wailing Wall, or to the Kotel. As far as Trump was concerned, he was happy to have you know, Netanyahu accompany him, and both of them pray together at the wall. But for some reason, they're saying it was a political optic, you know, that happened. And, you know, President Trump and his whole family, in essence, all had their time at the wall individually. So I think it was a good gesture, but I'm confused by the fact that the State Department didn't want Bibi to, you know, Prime Minister Netanyahu to be there with him. What's your take on that?
You know, I think the symbolism speaks volumes. The President of the United States actually being depicted at the wall and placing a prayer in the wall. I think that has a lot of visual impact, and also the implications, ideological implications, or implications that transcend just the mere politics. However, when was the last time, I genuinely don't know the answer to this question, when was the last time we had a president, an active seated president, engage in that activity? Did we ever have that happen? I don't recall ever seeing that. Maybe I missed it. Maybe I slept through that class. I don't know. But
you know, I don't know. I can't remember.
He was the first president. It says Trump
was
the first president to pray at Western Wall.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah. Now look, he, as far as I could see, he did all the right moves, you know, in Israel. And he was trying to be very careful to not let his personal friendship, you know, be the main news item as far as what he was doing. But you know that for 35, 40 years that he and Netanyahu have been friends and been guests in each other's homes. So that's a good thing. And I, well, I know that Israel is a house divided. You know, they've got more parties than Republicans. Democrats, they got several, you know, groups of power factions that have to bond together to form, you know, a ruling government every time they have an election. And Netanyahu's, you know, just squeaked in, and it's held the power by very clever discussions with some of the parties that he had to win over to his side of the coalition. So it's not a done deal that Israel will want to do everything in the future that we would like them to do with us in the Middle East. So right now is a very critical short window, you know, short window time to get things done in the Middle East that we need to do to protect, you know, our oil interests and to protect Israel, and hopefully to get away from nuclear war with Iran and Syria. It's good that Netanyahu and Trump are old-time friends, and I hope that Prime Minister Netanyahu does keep his seat, you know, and is able to stay there a long time to, you know, settle the situation in the Middle East as far as Israel's defense. I'm certainly glad that we're able to send them, you know, aircraft and, you know, the F-35 fighter bombers and things like that. But if we can't keep Trump in office for 8 years, it's going to be a short and incomplete deal in the Middle East as far as U.S. involvement.
I agree with that, Stan, and I am concerned about the push against Donald Trump, the impeachment, potential for impeachment. It seems like it doesn't matter what the truth is. The leaks are out of control. The pushback against appointments are just incredulous. Obama, the shadow government, and working in collusion with Hillary Clinton and the Clinton team, all of this, I'm not sure anyone could withstand that. I don't know.
I don't know. Look, my hat's off to the man, to President Trump. I mean, it is hard enough to try to turn the country around without having all these stumbling blocks by former presidents and, you know, power magnates like, you know, Soros. They're not playing fair. They're not giving him a fair go. There is no intention of letting any other person or party change the way that the Washington elite wanted to go. We pray for him every day, Holly and I, twice a day at least, and for his safety and his family's safety, and Vice President Pence, and for his appointed administration that are working with him. I've just never seen such a mutiny, I guess it would be, against the president, against the White House. It's sad. It's the end of the peaceful age that we used to have here after the war.
You know, the everything that we had said about Obama, the exposures of Obama's problems from his identity through, I mean, if when we go back and we look at all of this and compare the, we'll just compare Obama to President Trump. To me, this shows how powerful the media has become, especially under Obama, the corporate media. Although most people now are beginning to realize it's all erroneous, or deliberately erroneous, or propaganda. It's still fashioning the talking points for the talking heads out there. So and the public as well. So, yeah, it's now. What about Vice President Pence? Because if they were successful in removing, and I pray that this does not happen, because it affects our country. But how do you stand? How do you feel about Mike Pence? I guess we'll get the answer to that question on the other side.
To hit that on the other side of the break, folks. You're listening to this edition of the Hagmann Report. Stan Deo is our guest. Go to the website, standeo.com. Bookmark the website. And each and every time Stan comes on, not only can you read his website for the photo of the day, video of the day, all the news and updated information on the books and DVDs, but also the show images page is right there on the right-hand side of the microphone, on the right-hand side of the website. You pull that up, and you can follow along with all the research and information Stan put together to present on the show. We'll be right back with Stan Deo after these short messages. Don't go anywhere.
Visit HagmannReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
There shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. I mean, it is... It'll blow you away. Absolutely, Eric said.
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report family, MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow, it's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Caring Close in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We are offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Remedies Kit. It contains 12 homeopathic remedies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Remedies Kit at www.changeclosenwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagmann and Hagmann Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagmann for making this all possible. God bless.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, for this final segment on this edition of the Hagmann Report. Our guest is Mr. Stan Deo. StanDeo.com is the website, and bookmark that website. There's tons of useful information posted daily there by both Stan and Holly, and it's a great source of info, not only for when he comes on, but just in general. Before the break, Stan, we asked you what you thought of Mike Pence with all this mainstream media talk of impeachment, I don't believe will go anywhere, at least not with anything they have been presenting for reasons now. But what let's just say hypothetically that it does happen. What do you think of Mike Pence?
Well, you know, on the surface, what we see in the press, Mike Pence is a good Christian man, a, you know, family man, and however, I think he probably comes from the establishment that they allowed him to be, you know, put in as a vice president, I think, so that it was a man that they could influence should he become president. I do think that it's the you know, the left wing, the ones that want to destroy America, that, you know, the Illuminati, the Illuminists, whatever you want to call them, the guys that are opposing Trump, I do think that they are trying their best to get rid of Trump, you know, either physically or legally or whatever. And we pray against that, as I suppose a lot of Christians do every day. But if Mike Pence comes in, he may be more controllable than, you know, Donald Trump, because he doesn't have the resources behind him that Trump does. You know, it's look at this. Look at what the deal we're talking about, where Trump signs a $110 billion defense deal, right, with the Saudis over the weekend.
Mm-hmm. $110 billion arms deal.
Yeah, already you have Senator Rand Paul wanting to force a vote against that to stop the sale of weapons to Saudi Arabia. His alleged reason is because he doesn't want to draw the United States into a Yemeni war, because Saudi Arabia is down there in Yemen and having, you know, an involvement in the civil war down there, which is mainly started by the Iranians pushing over there the Shiite Muslims. But before Trump even gets home, here is Rand Paul trying to undo this deal that he's done to sell the weapons. Now, as I said to you, that's his alleged reason, is, you know, to avoid getting involved in the Yemeni civil war down there as support to Saudi Arabia. I mean, you know, that contract that they signed, United States, Trump signed with the Saudis, giving them our missiles, our bombs, armored personnel carriers, those really nice new, stealth littoral combat ships, high-altitude area defense missile systems, and, you know, all kinds of munitions. I wonder about the wisdom of that myself, but as I expressed earlier in the program, but I don't have access to all the information that the White House does, or Senator Rand Paul, but anyway, you know, it has already started. Let's undo what President Trump has just done. That's what Senator Rand Paul is trying to do. He probably won't get a vote to knock it down. I think he tried it once during the Obama administration as well. I think it was last year, midsummer, late summer, something like that. But you'll see that on the Drudge Report. He's tried to cause Mr. Trump or President Trump grief. Anyway, that's here and there.
And hey, Rand, just a closing thought on what you said. Rand Paul has continued to be an objective voice in the Senate. When it comes to Trump, he's been very fair. I don't know. I'd have to look at. I saw what we were talking about with him wanting to force a vote on it. I don't know what standing he would have or what his reasons are, but that's definitely something to look into. Yeah, go ahead, Stan.
Yeah, well, I know that. You know, I was looking at the tape, the video of the royal reception over there in Saudi Arabia for the Trumps, and when they were having their tea service, I think, or sometime around that time, Melania, who was sitting next to Ben Nayef, you know, the older crown prince, trying to take the throne. Anyway, if you look at image 36 I've got, and just click and look at the big picture, you'll see her body language is confrontational. You know, her left leg is over her right one, pointing away from Ben Nayef, and of course he's leaned over toward her, you know, like for this conversation. He's all kind what the behind-the-scenes feeling in the Trump family is toward Ben Nayef. I think I think Trump favors young Ben Salman, you know, the one in Image 34. He's a guy to watch. Look, I tell you what, he's bright. He's forming a, or he's already formed an investment pool in the Middle East, which is like going to be like $20 trillion in by 2030, I think. You know, from all the investments and earnings are going to get. He's involved in blockchain. You know, in a company that set up the blockchain international. Digital exchange for corporations, so that if you buy, I don't know, yachts or whatever from some company, that it'll have tagged to that yacht forever in the international digital exchange. It'll have who bought the yacht, who they bought it from, how much they paid for it, and a lot of other details about that yacht, which will travel with it until it's destroyed. And it's blockchain documenting, which they want to then put onto people. So that everything about people will be in the transaction they make. If you buy a car, then, you know, Doug bought this car on this date. It was this kind of car. He paid this much for it. And then when he sold it, it went to blogs. And, you know, here's blogs details. This is the forerunner for what the new world order will need under the Antichrist of the this age. Now, I don't think that the first Antichrist, you know, or the Antichrist before the false prophet, I don't think the first Antichrist will be able to set up that financial system. Remember, he gets the head wound, he recovers everything, but the false prophet, the one that comes after the second beast, causes images to be made to the first beast. And it describes the first beast in so many ways. And if you look at Revelation 13:18, I just mentioned 13, but 13:18, now it says, here wisdom is, let anyone who has understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. Now, that's telling you that first beast is a man. And this is the second beast, you know, talking about the first beast and causing people to worship an image of the first beast, which is a man. But the man that had the wisdom was Solomon. Solomon, just like young Prince Ben Salman we're talking about here. And he's very smart, and, you know, his thing is economics. He's into banking. He's into setting up investment funds. He's moving them away from pure oil dependency, and he's revising the social and religious customs of the country to allow women more freedom under, you know, the Sunni faith. And he's the guy to watch. I'm telling you, Mohammed bin Salman is the man that could most probably be the Middle Eastern first Antichrist, you know, the Antichrist, the first beast. And I just watch these things developing here. He's going to be handling, he's in charge of the portfolio for defense. He's going to be handling all those arms. He has already formed what they're calling in the news today an Arab-NATO type alliance of the 34 nations. We talked about this, you and I, last year, you know, about this 34 nation. Okay, he's doing exactly what he's supposed to do according to prophecy. I'm sure this guy plays a major part, and he will probably be wounded and you know, take a back seat eventually. And I think the real power is in the second beast, you know, the false prophet, going over to Erdogan or to the Pope or somebody over in that area, who will pick up the mantle and, you know, say, you know, the first beast, you know, this, well, why is it Solomon, or maybe even his name is Solomon, you know, he was on the right track, and let's support him and let's worship him and that kind of stuff. So the first beast will have power for a short time, I think, but the second beast is the one to watch, in my opinion.
Okay.
In my opinion. I know it's just an opinion, but...
Well, this is something you've been talking about for a long time, and it's definitely something we can keep our eye on and see how.
Well, don't you feel that there are things in this visit coming up, you know, to the surface that tell us that we're getting very close to the moment when Santa Christ is going to be identified, whoever he is.
What was that saying? Can you repeat that?
Sorry, it dropped out. I say, if you look at all the things that have been happening in Trump's visit so far, and, you know, what will happen in the Vatican as well, and, you know, when he goes up to Brussels as well. But what you're seeing he's going to be, whoever he is, we're very close to seeing him come to power. Very close.
Well, I would definitely agree that we are in the end times, and whether that's, you know, 2 years or 40 years, you know, when things are starting to be revealed, we're definitely getting closer. And the way things continue to intensify, it doesn't look like it's going to be slowing down anytime soon. That's for sure.
No. And then when you look at the developments down there, or the alleged developments at the South Pole, and all the strange going on, so we've talked about, a number of your guests have talked about, you know, I see us getting very close to the revealing of, you know, quote-unquote aliens and their presence on the planet as part of the thing that Daniel talked about, that the Antichrist will have to use to run the planet. There's just a lot of things, you know, disclosure, full disclosure of the UFO thing, that I think are just imminent.
Yeah. And Stan, I want to kind of switch gears here. I want to get your opinion on this. Any comments or thoughts on the soft target terrorist attack of the concert in Manchester yesterday?
Well, do you think that it was in response to Trump's hard stance on terrorism that this happened at this point in time?
Personally, just from what I've seen, I don't believe so. And from what I gather, it seems like this could be a terrorist cell, more than one individual who carried this out. And we are on the heels of Ramadan, which starts at the end of this week. So there could be a lot of reasons why. But, you know, the UK has since deployed the army on the streets, and they've heightened the terror alert to critical, which is the highest that they have, which means that expect an attack could be imminent. I don't know. It very well could be at the same time.
Well, I mean, we're stepping up, you know, I'm sure security over here to soft targets as well. But there are so many soft targets that, like I saw one of the guests, I forget his name, but he was former, I think, deputy director of the FBI, you know, anyway, this morning on Fox News, saying, look, we're not going to be able to stop all these things, but what we can do is educate you to be more observant. If you're going to a soft target area like a mall or a sporting event or, you know, high school competition, you know, of the teams, that kind of stuff, to be more observant of people around you, to see if you see someone leave a package or, you know, a backpack or something in a place and then wander off and just leave it, and report it immediately. You know, be more observant of that kind of stuff. See someone running away from a car, you know, what do they do to the car? Is it going to blow up? You know, that kind of stuff. It's calling on people to be more observant and to be, you know, like civilian police, in essence, to warn the officials that I think something weird is happening, and not to be afraid of making a mistake and saying, you know, that when some woman just left her purse by accident or something, you know. But that's how soft targets, you know, how we can deal with that. You're not going to be able to protect every place, and the thrust of terrorism is to cause terror. And, you know, one attack here, one plane blows up here, 9/11 buildings come down. Okay, now everybody is afraid. You know, whether another attack in that manner occurs doesn't matter. The terror is into the people for a time, and then they go back to sleep and think, hey, okay, everything's okay. The safety precautions are there. I see them at the TSA. And okay, now it's time for another fresh approach. Soft targets, you're not safe anywhere. And that I see coming to the forefront now, until eventually it won't be a death by a thousand cuts. It'll be the finishing blow, you know, to bring America and the Western nations to their knees.
The soft targets are, you know, things like we saw last night, concerts or arenas, sporting events, and I'm sure there are, you know, a laundry list of other soft targets we could go over. And, you know, in the U.S., there has been we haven't seen a big terror attack or even a terror attack in a little while now. And as you pointed out, the situational awareness, I guess is what you'd call it, as Bob Griswold was on our show talking about paying attention to your surroundings, how to use, you know, things around you to watch your back and keep your eye on other things. That is a major, important part. And, you know, so often we see in these terrorist attacks, as we just saw with this one, where this guy weeks before the attack was, you know, out in the street praying, you know, yelling, praying in the streets, just doing things that are odd, and out of character. And, you know, things like that can prevent things like this from happening. I just wonder, we know the refugees are here. We know the terrorists are among us and all Western nations. I just, each time one of these things happens, you just wonder, you know, how much more are we going to see? It's obviously not going to stop as long as we continue to tolerate and the media protect and the government protect these kind of people.
And there it is.
So,
and there it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And look, you know, you can't even say, like, if you're in a gathering of friends or family or you know, company employees, fellow employees, whatever, that you know all the faces, you can't even say, well, if there's a face you don't know in the crowd, then keep an eye on them, because if it's friends and, you know, quote unquote family, then, you know, we know that the Muslims or the terrorist Muslims, they train to fit in and to become part of the community for years. And it can be someone that's a familiar face. You can't just say, okay, like that California incident, there, you know, a man and wife that turned on their fellow employees and shot and killed so many of them. You have to be vigilant even with friends and family, you know, and coworkers and stuff when you go to a gathering where there's, you know, a significant number of you that could be taken down. And I noticed, too, I mean, it was young people in the U.K. and at a, you know, a concert.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't just tell them, look, don't trample each other getting out of the way. Use your head and make an orderly removal of yourself from wherever the loud noise was or where it was happening and find, you know, shelter if it's somebody that's an active shooter or something like that. But you can't teach people to not panic. You know what I mean? It's just...
Yeah, I was thinking about that last night, and, you know, I was wondering why with the, you know, you have the big arena, the big open area inside the arena where the concert took place, where the stage and the seats are, and then outside in the, through the doors, before you get to the actual outside, there's, you know, the box office area, they call it the foyer, where the attack took place, and you see, you hear this boom. If you watch some of the footage, you hear the boom, and then you just see, you know, this pandemonium where people are running in all directions. And one of the first things I thought, well, you know, it doesn't seem that there's any danger in the actual arena. Why are these people running? Then immediately after that, my mind thinks, well, so a bunch of people just saw, 100 people or more getting blown up. So how can you not react to that or react to the people around you reacting? But then I thought, you know, if I was half a block down the street and at the end of the block there's a crowd of people and all of a sudden they started running, am I going to immediately run because they're running and screaming? It's hard to sit there and, you know, like I guess they call it Monday morning quarterback.
I don't know if you're getting chased by a bear.
Well, if you're
in
way,
I just have to outrun you.
I was in New York in 1983 with the film crew, and we had a night off, and I was down on... I think Fifth Avenue somewhere anyway. You know, I was being by myself. I was dressed in a suit and everything. It was nighttime. And I was trying to not make, you know, waves or to be obvious for, you know, muggers or whatever. And there were people milling around shopping or whatever. And all of a sudden, I saw the street of people just start running toward me. Or on the street where I was next to a drugstore. Well, I didn't immediately say, I'm going to get out of here. I stepped into the doorway of the pharmacy there and let the crowd run on past me and to see, you know, whether they were running from something or to something. So, you know, if you keep your head and just try to assess the situation and not panic, you can, you know, probably save yourself a lot of harm. In this particular case, they were running to see one street corner down. A guy had tried to rob some store there, and he was shot, and he was laying in the gutter dying, and they wanted to run and see this dead person. But I didn't know that, and all I knew was this crowd of people, I mean, a lot of them running in my direction. So you just, I do think you need to just keep your wits about you and try to figure out how to keep yourself from getting, you know, shot, bombed, or run over by everybody running from whatever it was. I would think now then, with that loud sound, you know, the explosion went with that, that people in any, you know, soft target gathering now, if they get a loud noise, they're going to run, and I hope they don't trample each other. I hope they use common sense.
Yeah, and you know, that's probably one of the most important things is to not panic, and to keep your head. I mean, that could be the difference between life or death in a lot of cases. And then reacting to whatever it is that is going on around you, your reaction. But yeah, I don't know if we'll find out if anybody. There were reports yesterday that people got, you know, trampled and died, but I haven't seen any of that today. And as you said, can you really blame people when something like that happens for freaking out? I guess if you have to be there. But yeah, I mean, just back to the actual attack where. The suicide bomber targeted an event where there were just lots of children. It's very
if I can interject disturbing. This, the suicide bomber. I don't like that. It's homicide bomber.
Yeah,
it's Muslim homicide bomber.
Yeah,
but not suicide bomber.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I was having a think about something. I told Holly this about this gold medal that King Salman put around President Trump's neck.
Yeah, I saw that on your site.
Yeah. You know, if you think about it, President Trump didn't want to do like Obama and bend over and kiss the foot of, you know, King Salman, the Arab king. He wasn't going to do that, but he wanted to have this friendly visit with him. So they came up with a solution in that he would get this gold necklace medal and he would have to bow down because he's taller than the king to put the necklace on him, which then, you know, he did a little curtsy thing there, but it was almost negligible. So that he saves face and the king saves face. Well, I think that's what they were doing there.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't see any, anything about that except when I looked on the site.
Okay. All right. That was not a bow.
That was not a what?
A bow.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
No, that wasn't a bow.
Yeah, that's what I thought. All right.
Now, listen, I've been doing some work on the ultraviolet radiation coming from the sun. Since 1979, say 36, 37 years ago, the amount of ultraviolet radiation coming out of the sun has increased by 6%. You think, oh, well, big deal. But a change in the total amount of radiation coming from the sun, changing it up or down by 2% is enough to make an ice age. All right? Now, this ultraviolet radiation normally is shielded by the ozone layer, and the ozone layer is supported by our magnetic field, which, as you know, is weakening every day. Now, slide 43, or image 43 on my show images page, is linking to an article about man-made ionosphere. In other words, a mini ionosphere between the real ionosphere that shields us and the surface of the Earth. You can see from the image there, just from the little slide, that blue area is a cross-section of a donut-shaped field being produced by our high-altitude atomic testing in the past and by our VLF transmission, tremendously powerful transmissions like from Harp arrays and things like that, to our submarines. And these create an artificial ionosphere. The problem is, for that to be a benefit to us and to shield us from solar radiation and from ultraviolet stuff, the magnetic field of the Earth has to remain stable and not keep weakening like it is. So it's a great idea that they tell you about in the article that this could be used perhaps to shield us against unwanted radiation frequencies from the cosmos and from the sun. But until we can stabilize our magnetic field, even that won't work. But it is interesting that we have managed to, you know, man-made communications and nuclear testing have actually managed to affect our environment in outer space, or, you know, the outer atmospheres, like this. I mean, that's a tremendous accomplishment, I guess, or a tremendous result from human activity. And that could definitely affect, you know, the temperature of the planet and life.
Yeah. I mean, the and that's interesting, and I don't understand how that works, but looking at what you posted here, Dad, what was this brought something else to mind. What did Michael Lake say yesterday? What was the term of the I wrote it down somewhere.
With respect to what?
He was talking about the low frequency signal. Is it the Sherman resonance?
Oh, Schumann
resonance. Schumann resonance.
Yeah.
Stan, what are your? We only have a few minutes left. The Schumann resonance. Can you give us just a brief explanation of what that is?
Well, it's a natural vibration that occurs on the Earth, but it's been changing slightly. It used to be fairly stable in the, say, between 7 cycles a second and 15 cycles a second, as I recall. But it's been shifting and changing the frequency, which indicates something is wrong, and I think it's the magnetic field that's doing it, because the Schumann resonance is a signal that is tuned to the, say, the circumference, the diameter of the Earth, and its magnetic field. And once these vibrations start, they reinforce themselves, harmonics, if you wish, so that they stay there. And it's kind of a thing that the animal kingdom depends on. A lot of the marine animals and birds and stuff depend on the Schumann resonance frequencies to guide them, you know, like a compass.
Okay.
So
it's basically a frequency that resonates throughout the Earth.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and in the cavity around the Earth, yeah. Mm.
And it's necessary to sustain life, correct?
I think it's pretty instrumental in it, yes. It's kind of like a traffic cop for the animal kingdom.
Interesting.
And look at all the beachings of whales and stuff like that. You know, as our magnetic field and the Schumann resonance gets disturbed, they're not navigating properly, and they beach themselves as they hit the wrong direction.
That was my thought exactly, was, you know, maybe some of these strange animal mass deaths that we see were connected to this somehow. But Stan, we've run out of time. I want to thank you for all the great information that you brought, and we'll pick this up next week.
Very interesting hour, by the way.
Absolutely. It always is. Stan, you have a great night.
Guys,
you and Holly both.
All right, I'll
absolutely
tell her. Bye-bye.
That'll do it for us. Bye, Holly. All right, guys, that'll do it for us tonight. Until tomorrow, stay safe, God bless, and have a great evening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.